sanctions imposed on Russia in the wake of the Ukraine war. Since the beginning of the war in Ukraine in late February, Western countries have slapped waves of sanctions on Russia. In response, Moscow has either choked up or lessened its gas exports to the rest of Europe, saying it would only resume the gas flow after the economic sanctions were lifted. Disruption in supply chains has led to higher fuel and food prices across the EU, driving inflation to record levels and causing the cost of living to soar. The European Union leaders accused the Kremlin of wielding energy as a weapon, cutting gas supplies in retaliation for sanctions. The protesters also called on the US-led NATO coalition to immediately stop supplying arms to Ukraine and to work to resolve the simmering crisis through diplomacy.
I have three priorities for our economy. Growth, growth, and growth.
Flip-flopping and humiliating U-turn are the terms used by members of parliament and various media outlets on Liz Truss's 180 on her 45% tax cut for the rich. Truss and her chancellor Kwasi Kwarteng thought that a tax cut for the rich would create more jobs and then eventually lead up to tax cuts for the general public as a part of her trickle-down economic plans in what is being referred to in the media as mini-budget.
How is that fair that you get a tax cut of over 2,000 while people on average income see much less?
So everybody is getting a tax cut, and the situation that we were in was we were putting up taxes. That was the immediate situation that we were in. We were facing a situation where the tax burden was at a 70-year high, and that was completely unacceptable. The Prime Minister campaigned for the leadership on the basis that we were going to reduce taxes, and that's exactly what we've done.
Truss and Kwarteng were quickly forced to turn back on their decision as the plan was received very poorly by Truss's own Tory party, who threatened to vote against the tax cuts.
I don't comment on market movements, but what is good for the economy?
Who caused it?
What is good for the economy?
The tax cuts would have been the largest set of unfunded tax cuts for the rich in over 50 years and a huge gamble on public finances and the health of UK economy, according to Welsh Finance Minister Rebecca Evans. When the news broke out about her tax cut plans, the British pound hit a record low against the dollar, prompting a $73 billion budget allocation by Bank of England to shore up the markets before the pound partially recovered. The British Premier, however, blamed communication errors in how the package was presented, and some communication error that was, the kind that shocked markets and voters and couldn't get her the support she needed by her own Conservative Party before she had to back off on it. The controversy in her economic plan comes after the worst start to a new administration in recent memory in the UK, with people already questioning how long Britain's new Prime Minister will remain in office. One might even say trust is fading in Truss. The UK's GDP growth has been on a slow but steady decline since 2014, from 1% down to 0%. It was the pandemic, however, that completely flatlined the UK economy, causing the single biggest slump in its GDP since its GDP was recorded in 1961. By extension, according to the Office for National Statistics, the UK consumer price inflation hit just over 10% in the 12 months to July. That is the highest inflation rate in the country since the early 80s. Things aren't much different outside the UK, across the Green Continent. Certainly the pandemic caused its own set of problems for European economy, but perhaps it was the Ukraine war and the subsequent food and energy crisis that really cemented Europe's ongoing and expected economic downturn. Drastic plans to manage the crisis is being implemented across Europe. 3-hour power cuts to homes and businesses are expected during this winter in the UK. Germany rationed hot water, dimmed streetlights, and shut down swimming pools. French people are using more and more wood and less gas to heat their homes. Buildings in Italy will have 15 extra days without central heating. This all begs the question, is the insistence of the West on prolonging the Ukraine war really worth the damages it is causing their economy and their people?
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station. Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. I am a Muslim.
Islamite.
Islamite.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all of time.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, everyone. Welcome back to a new episode of your very favorite program, Youth Station. Well, this is Asma, and here with me I have Bito.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I'm really honored to be here today at your service.
How are you, Bito?
I'm doing well, thank you very much.
Yeah, life is moving.
How about you?
Yeah, it's just fine. Well, it's living, and we have to go on.
Yeah, I know that.
So, what are we going to talk about today?
We have a really hot topic today that, you know, I'm really interested in that sort of things. And our topic is, young people or old people know better about life?
Oh, it's a long story.
Yeah, it's the same old long story.
Yeah. But I think nowadays we could say that even young people can know as much as old people.
You know, I'm not talking about ability or something right now. The thing is, about our today topic, there is something that really bothers me, and it's generalization. You know, I hate generalization about anything.
And
when
you
divide, for example, people by kind of special matter like age, like, I don't know, appearance, everything, the color or anything, it really bothers me. I don't know why.
It is, because it is bothering.
You know, it's annoying. Actually, I don't like to say that you can divide people by their age. By number, for example, I'm 18 years old, but by experience, by the, you know, level of intellect that I have, by the level of education I have, it cannot actually be determined about my age, you know what?
Yeah, I know what you mean. But you know what, Bita? We should not say that age does not matter, because it really does.
No, I'm not telling you that age doesn't matter. I'm telling you that that we are talking about, what is it?
See, the difference between the old generation and the younger generation, that's what we're talking about.
I understand it. But, you know, there are some people that in appearance or in the number, they are younger than other people.
Yeah, but definitely.
Deep in, you know, themselves, they are really old.
Yeah, of course.
When you talk to them, you understand it.
And we have plenty much of them.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
The old youngs, you know
what you mean, but still, age has got something to say.
I know.
See, there are plenty much of people, I do believe in what you say. There are many people who are, they're 20, they feel as an old person who's 60, but they're 20. It's still, they have the same knowledge, they have the same experience and the perspective about life. But also, we have older people who do not know much of things.
I know that.
You know? And it happens. And recently, I just came to think that maybe even the youngsters could help you and consult you in many things, just as the elder one.
Exactly.
You know?
Because, you know, the diversity that exists in themselves in their lives mm-hmm. is so different in a way that you can just trust them and you can ask them and you will face new answers.
Yeah.
And this is somehow interesting. And we have social life today. We have kind of a special social life with medias, with, I don't know, virtual area or something like that, mm-hmm. that will change the way you live. You know
what?
We live faster and faster in generations.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, this will help you grow older faster. You know
exactly,
what I mean?
Exactly, yeah.
For example, in old days, you know, there weren't that much news or everything that you can be aware of the world
Nothing
around you.
Nothing was much available. You know, for
exactly.
a certain information, you had to go through too mm-hmm. much of books and libraries and mm-hmm. so many things, and it did take too much of time.
And another thing is that you just experience things faster and faster.
Yeah,
because you have access to many things in social media, in mm-hmm. Everything, and you are contacting more people than the old generation.
Yeah, yeah. This interaction would give you so much of
exactly.
knowledge. So what do you say about a very short break?
I do agree with that
yeah.
one.
Dear listeners, you're listening to Youth Station. So let's go for a short break and we'll be back in no time. Welcome back. This is IRIB English Radio. We are in here in Youth Station. We're talking about age. Is it really true that the youngsters are the same as the old people in the knowledge and in their experience and the things they can tell you? Anbita is saying that there's nothing that we could generalize and we cannot just say that it's the youngsters who are better or the old people who are better in knowledge and experience.
Yeah.
And we do believe in that because, as you just said, Bita, media is changing many things.
But, you know, the thing is, even old generations are using this social media more and more.
Yeah.
And it is like there is a competition between the old generation and young
yeah.
generation, too, in this area that they want to know more about mm-hmm. the world around them.
Has it ever happened to you to go for an old person for advice?
Yes, of course. You know, I don't like advices, actually. I don't know. It is about my age that I don't like to be kind of advised or something.
No, okay,
but
let's just
yeah,
not call
yeah.
it advice
yeah, exactly.
for consulting.
But the thing is, yeah, I had this experience. I was like, sometimes I was shocked about their knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
It felt
more
like,
tangible.
Exactly.
And it's more,
exactly.
it has got more truth.
It was like,
religion.
Yeah, they were just going through all the things that I will experience in my life.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, this is the same story that Dave experienced and I will experience the same thing.
Yeah. See, and of course, you have your friends in your hand and mm-hmm. every time you come to have a problem, you go to them. Do you see any difference between going to an old person and going to a young person?
There is difference because when I go to, for example, a young person for advice or something,
mm-hmm.
it's like they are like me. They are at the same level of life that I am.
Yeah.
You know, it is like that they want to help me by their imagination. Not the real things.
Of course.
When I go to young people to, you know, talk about my problems or something, it feels like somehow different. There is a different atmosphere. And I'm not going to tell you that which one is better because
of
both
course.
Of them are useful
both
and helpful. But
advantages.
The thing is, old people are more trustful. You know, you can just trust
yeah.
them better.
You know, they've been there and done that.
Exactly.
So it's different to get it from a person who has already experienced it
mm-hmm.
and touched it with their bones and the skin. So it is different.
It is. When I have a problem,
mm-hmm.
I usually go to both of these people.
Yeah, in order to have both perspectives.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
To see which one we have to trust more and more.
Not which one, both of them.
You make a balance.
A combination
between
of,
both
them
of them
is more
yeah.
useful.
Yeah, that's very true. And as you just said, internet has made a big change in our life. Now we have access to plenty much of information
mm-hmm.
and knowledge, but if you do not disagree, I would say there's a vast ocean, but it does not have much of depth. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Because we read too much of things, but we do not remember most of them.
Even it's not about remembrance. It's about the depth of the knowledge that person that wrote this article or anything that
mm-hmm.
has. You know,
yeah.
unfortunately, today, nowadays, everybody is a doctor. Everybody is an engineer. Everybody,
yeah.
everybody is everything.
Because education has been available everywhere. And as I just told you,
but
the
this
access
education,
to different things.
You know, is not systematic.
Yeah.
It's something that It is there. It is everywhere.
Yeah,
and
it is
the
there.
Thing we want. Mm-hmm. We want to be professional. And this profession is kind of being lost in nowadays.
Yeah. So one of the reasons for these youngsters to change into these experienced people who know many things is net. What could be another reason? Do you think there's another reason for that?
Of course, there are many reasons that, you know...
Count them for me.
Yeah, I cannot count them because they are uncountable. Like,
so?
The thing is, besides internet, which is, I think, is the most important reason of these mm-hmm. changes, I think one of the other reasons is about the personality of young people and old people.
Which you is know, also under the effect of media.
Not that much. You know, I'm talking about the passion and energy that young people have.
So what's the difference between the passion I have right now and the passion I would have had 100 years ago?
Not 100 years ago, you weren't here. But the thing is, when you are passionate about something, there mm-hmm. is a desire to do new things.
So
I'm talking about that desire.
And
exactly.
motivation in people
exactly.
that they want to change. And
mm-hmm. And this desire
more.
Sometimes persuades you to do something that you won't do. If, for example, you were talking to an old person.
Yeah.
You know what? And this is the problem, I think. When you're talking to a young person, it's like, okay, there is passion, there is love, there are many things, there are many new things that I want to take risk and do them. And this risk, mm-hmm. unfortunately, is somehow limited by old generation.
Oh, so you're blaming the old generation
yes.
for restrictions in the borders.
I don't want to turn a blame to someone or something, but the thing is, they actually, because they had some bad experience, they're like, okay, you will experience the same thing, but mm-hmm. maybe it's not like that. I'm a different person.
They're more cautious, you know. The
yeah.
more you get older, the more you want to do things while you're on alert.
I just understand them, you know.
Because you still are 18,
mm-hmm.
that's why. When you grow older, when you start
yeah,
to turn
yeah.
into your 30, then you mm-hmm. would understand that. Sometimes what older generation have done is the same thing for you. Because as I just told you, when you grow older, you start to think in a more cautious way.
I know.
You're not going to take much of risks.
Even in young generation, we have some people that, you know, they won't take risks because they're like, okay, I won't do that because I know the results. I know everything about this
mm-hmm.
and I won't do that. It's somehow logical, but when you're too logical to leave.
Yeah, let me just share with you, Bita, something
yeah.
personal, which is very much interesting and related to this story
mm-hmm.
of the older generation
I'm
and the younger
here.
Generation. I have a brother who's younger mm-hmm. than me, around 10 years he's younger than me.
Okay.
But still, when I have a problem, I go to him, and
oh
he
gosh.
Seems to be such a great consulter. Though he's younger
nice.
Than me, but I feel that he has got so much of experience and knowledge to share. The perspective they have about life is actually different from the older generation.
Mm-hmm.
They see some angles that that has not been unfolded for the other people who are perhaps a little bit older.
It was nice, you know, because
yeah.
most of the time, old generation is like, okay, you're too young to
mm-hmm.
consult us. You're too young to do that, to do this.
Yeah.
We don't trust you or something. And it was really nice to hear that you trust us. You trust our generation. And
like I'm an old generation right
you
now.
Are.
I am the
you,
symbol
you have
of
to
the
believe.
Old generation.
No, I'm not telling that, but you are different. You know, even 1 year can be a new generation.
Yeah, that's very true.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
We're just here talking to the youth about the youngsters who are technically in the same level of knowledge and experience with the older people.
Mm-hmm.
And we said that media has changed many things. We said that internet has brought such a drastic change into people's life that even a young boy or girl could be so much experienced as he or she is 60 or 70. Perhaps back in time, when you were 70, you had the same experience and knowledge that a a person of a 20-year-old would have in
but
modern day.
You know what? This is somehow sad, you know? I mean, you see someone who is in a young generation or something, but he or she is in a way of life which is really difficult for her age or his age. Mm-hmm. It was a big sorrow for me. It's
why?
It's like they are different, you know? They're different from the world that they have to be in that. You know what I mean? I'm telling you that, for example, I'm 18 years old, but I'm thinking like a 60-year-old woman, and what is it? It's not good that much, you know, because sometimes you are really different from the atmosphere of the other people in generation.
I know what you mean, but just as we said, the much of things that happen in the world around us, the much of catastrophes that happen would make you grow faster. You know what I mean?
Yes.
The more problems you would face, the more mature you would get. Mm-hmm. That's my idea, actually. It's a personal thing.
Agree, yeah.
I'm not here to proclaim and announce a theory or whatever. I'm just saying my personal idea. I do believe that problems and things that happen around you, that you have to solve them, you have to face them, are the things that will make you grow faster.
Mm-hmm.
And you would be matured at an age that is perhaps earlier than the desired one. So I guess it's not a bad thing. It's very much good to have that much of maturity. And
telling you it's bad. It's somehow, it was different.
But still, I think it's a good thing. Trust me, when you get older, you would understand that the experiences that you have right now and the things that you feel right now are going to come to your help at a certain age.
I trust what you're telling me because you are from old generation.
Thank
and
you
I
for calling me old.
You're welcome.
Okay, dear listeners, I'm no longer you. She has made me a woman with a wrinkled face. Let's say that age does not matter. And the only thing that matters is the way you look at life, your perspective, your knowledge, experience, and maturity. Thank you for staying with us. Until another session, I bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
In the limelight. Former U.S. President Donald Trump on Friday, 14th of October, issued what he characterized as his official response to the January 6th Select Committee after a panel voted to subpoena him. But he didn't say if he'll testify to the January 6th panel. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. The British newspaper The Guardian has more on the story. Donald Trump is considering testifying in front of the House January 6th committee, which this week concluded a dramatic hearing establishing what it says is his culpability for a deadly Capitol attack by voting to subpoena the former president. On Friday, 14th of October, sources close to Donald Trump confirmed to The Guardian that he may choose to appear before the congressional panel. Such an appearance would set up an unprecedented high-stakes political event. Donald Trump, meanwhile, issued an angry and rambling public letter to Benny Thompson, the Mississippi Democrat who chairs the January 6th panel. Since last June, Thompson's committee has laid out in extraordinary detail the chaos, the fear and violence of a day now linked to 9 deaths. Regardless, under the title Peacefully and Patriotically, Trump reeled off a string of abuse, lies, unsubstantiated claims, and outright conspiracy theories about the 2020 presidential election and the 6th of January 2021. In a predictably intemperate introduction, Donald Trump said the presidential election of 2020 was rigged and stolen. It was not. He also cited the Russia investigation over 2016 presidential election, interference and links between Trump and Moscow, impeachment hoax number one, his impeachment for blackmailing Ukraine for political dirt, impeachment hoax number two, for inciting the Capitol attack, the atrocious and illegal spying on my campaign, a debunked claim, and so much more. He called the members of Benny Thompson's committee highly partisan political hacks and thugs whose sole function is to destroy the lives of many hard-working American patriots. Nancy Pelosi, the House Speaker, rejected Republican attempts to place Trump allies on the January 6th committee, including congressmen implicated in his attempt to overturn the 2020 presidential election, the fuel for the Capitol attack. Two anti-Trump Republicans, Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger, sit on the House panel. Testimony presented has been overwhelmingly from Republicans and members of Trump's White House and administration. Donald Trump has sent cease and desist letters to media outlets, including The Guardian, that call him a liar in print. Nonetheless, his letter rehashed his big lie about election fraud, appendices listing debunked claims about Arizona, Pennsylvania, Georgia, and Michigan, key states in Joe Biden's conclusive win. In an echo of Trump's famous refusal to admit that the crowd of his inauguration in 2016 was actually smaller than that for Barack Obama in 2008, the former president also exaggerated the size of the crowd which heard him speak near the White House on 6 of January 2021, the speech in which he told his supporters to fight like hell. The website Politico.com has more on the same story. The January 6th Select Committee's subpoena of Donald Trump is not a play to secure his testimony. It's a dare for the former president. Rebut our case against you if you can. We have left no doubt, none, that Donald Trump led an effort to upend American democracy that directly resulted in the violence on 6th of January 2021. The House panel's chair, Representative Benny Thompson, said on Thursday as members approved the subpoena. He tried to take away the voice of the American people and replace the will of the voters with his own will to remain in power. He is the one person at the center of the story of what happened on 6th of January 2021. After a year-long investigation that's amassed extraordinary evidence of Donald Trump's multi-front drive to subvert the 2020 election, the unanimous subpoena is a symbolic capstone that signals the panel's final phase. Beyond the historic weight of the committee's bid to make Trump the fourth former president to ever testify before Congress, its members and aides are under little illusion they will successfully obtain Trump's testimony. Any legal effort to compel Donald Trump is likely to take years, far longer than the 2.5 months until the Select Committee sunsets at the end of the current Congress. Some of the Select panel held out hope, with tongues perhaps slightly in cheeks, that Donald Trump might willingly appear for a deposition without necessitating the drag-out court fights that have defined his career. After all, they noted, he facilitated lengthy testimony by his son Donald Jr. and his daughter Ivanka Trump without asserting any privileges that might have limited his children's testimony. I would consider it a great honor and privilege to testify if somebody accused me of trying to overthrow a presidential election and subvert the government in the United States, said Representative Jamie Raskin, a Democrat from Maryland. Jamie Raskin added, so I have every reason to believe that every American citizen would comply with the subpoena. Others close to the committee joked privately that Donald Trump might relish the ratings such public testimony would draw even if it cut against his legal and political interests as he barrels towards another likely presidential run. The website Axios.com examines the story from a different angle. Former President Donald Trump on Friday issued what he characterized as his official response to the January 6th Select Committee after a panel voted to subpoena him. In the 14-page letter addressed to Representative Benny Thompson, a Democrat from Mississippi, the chair of the House panel, Donald Trump rehashed a multitude of critiques he and his Republican allies have previously lodged against the panel. After an 8-page appendix laying out unfounded claims of fraud in the 2020 presidential election, he wrote, "At your request, I will present these additional numbers to you. It's not clear whether the panel has even issued its subpoena of Donald Trump yet, making the reply potentially premature." Benny Thompson said on Thursday that the subpoena would be issued as soon as we get the paperwork. He told the website Axios that the panel has not had prior communications with Donald Trump's legal team, aside from the ex-president's litigation to shield White House records. Spokespeople for the January 6th House Committee did not immediately respond to requests for comment.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, self-refinement. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome everyone. You're listening to IRB English Radio. And this is A to Z program. I'm your host, Hussein Hinzano. Now, in today's lesson, we are going to talk about self-refinement. Now, self-refinement is like evacuation, you know, doing tahliyeh, separating yourself from a few issues in order to know to bring about a good self, separating yourself from a few issues in order for you to become a better person or to deal in a good manner. False beliefs and superstitions are ignorance and deviations that result in self-darkness and deviation from following the straight path of perfection and God's nearness, of perfection and God's nearness. Because the believers in false beliefs never recognize the straight path of human perfection. And, you know, they start wander aimlessly and confused in the darkness, valleys of deviation and vices, never reaching to their undefined final destination. So how come the heart, which is full of intense darkness, can witness the ever-shining sacred divine illumination? Also, the moral indecencies strengthen the animalistic habits, gradually silencing the light within the celestial human soul. Now, such a deviated person will never succeed in accomplishing the most exalted human objective of reaching the nearness of the supreme source of beauty and absolute perfection. One of the examples is like the God Almighty. He's not going to be close to them. So definitely a human being needs self-refinement in life in order for him to plan and to make his life in a planned manner in a way he can be closer to God than being far. Self-refinement is one of the antiviruses of the many problems that we face in our lives.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z program from the IRB English Radio. In today's lesson, we are talking about self-refinement, like it's evacuation, making yourself free for something good. Now, similarly, shining and transgressions make the human self dark and contaminated, thus causing him further to deviate from the exalted path of human perfection and God's nearness. Naturally, such a person will never reach to its ultimate cherished goal. Therefore, self-refinement determines our final destination and should be considered as an extremely important matter. We must therefore first identify the moral indecencies and sins, and then, after that, we do our best and take remedial actions for cleansing and purifying ourselves from these impurities. Now, fortunately, in the first part, we do not have any problem because the physicians of the self or God's assigned human specialists, like the prophets and the infallible imams, they have done what? They have counted various kinds of sins and taught us how to relinquish them. We all recognize moral indecencies and understand their ugliness. Now, thank you so much for listening to this show. We're hoping that next time you're going to make sure you're going to do your best and do some self-refinement. Check on what you're supposed to be doing, correct it, make yourself free, evacuate yourself, let yourself be evacuated in a way it brings in good and puts away what is bad, so that we could reach our best self. We can reach the level of having our best self and being much closer to God and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Thank you so much for listening to the show. Until next episode, inshallah. Fi amanillah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
What about you? IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
U.S. President Joe Biden's incorrect performance in the field of foreign, domestic and economic policy has caused his popularity to drop extensively. President Biden's approval rating has remained below 50% since August of 2021, a warning sign that his Democratic Party could lose control of at least one chamber of the U.S. Congress in the November 8 midterm elections. Thus, Republicans are expected to achieve victories in the midterm elections this November. If they take control of the U.S. House of Representatives, more than two-thirds of them believe that Joe Biden should be impeached. We take a look at some of the world media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. MSNBC, an American news-based television channel based in New York, has this to say. U.S. Republicans hoping to seize control of the House of Representatives this November are already setting their sights on what is, for many of them, a top priority next year: impeaching the current president, Joe Biden. A number of rank-and-file conservatives have already introduced impeachment articles in the current Congress against President Biden. Those resolutions never had a chance of seeing the light of day, with Democrats holding a narrow control of the lower chamber. But with Republicans widely expected to win the House majority in the midterm elections, many of the same conservatives wanted to tap their new potential powers to oust the president they deem unfit. Some would like to make it a first order of business. The article quoted a variety of GOP lawmakers and their spokespersons, including Representative Bob Good of Virginia, insisting that the Democratic president should be impeached for intentionally opening the U.S. border with Mexico, despite the fact that this has never happened in reality. As regular leaders may recall, this isn't altogether new. One of the first Republican lawmakers to broach the subject of impeaching Joe Biden was Iowa Senator Joni Ernst, who raised the prospect 2 years ago, long before the Delaware Democrat had even secured his party's nomination. The GOP senator, Joni Ernst, said at the time that the impeachment door has been opened, and pointed to conspiracy theories about Burisma, a holding company, and Ukraine. Also, after Joe Biden's inauguration, several House Republicans filed articles of impeachment against the Democratic president. And earlier this year, Republican Senator Ted Cruz of Texas added that he believed the Republican-led House would likely consider impeaching Joe Biden on multiple grounds. Senator Ted Cruz added a few weeks ago that in the wake of the FBI's Mar-a-Lago search, the pressure to impeach Joe Biden is going to be enormous. Representative Jim Jordan, a Republican position to the chair of the House Judiciary Committee, has said he wants to see his party at least begin a conversation about impeaching President Biden. The Hill has more on this story. At least 8 resolutions to impeach Joe Biden have been offered since he took office, 3 related to his handling of the migrant surge at the southern border with Mexico, 3 targeting his management of the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan last year, 1 denouncing the eviction moratorium designed to help renters during the pandemic, and still another connected to the overseas business dealings of his son, Hunter Biden. Those proposals will expire with the end of this Congress, but some of the sponsors are already vowing to revisit them quickly next year. Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, a Republican from Georgia, the lead sponsor of 4 of the impeachment resolutions, is among them. Nick Dyer, a Green spokesman, said recently in an email. Marjorie Taylor Greene believes Joe Biden should have been impeached as soon as he was sworn into office, so of course she wants it to happen as soon as possible. A noisy impeachment push for the GOP's right flank could create headaches for Representative Kevin McCarthy of California, the Republican leader in line to be Speaker of the House, and other party brass just as the 2024 presidential cycle heats up. Another strategy GOP leaders may adopt is to impeach a high-ranking member of the administration, but not the president himself. Several resolutions have been introduced to do just that, separately targeting Vice President Kamala Harris, the Secretary of State Anthony Blinken, the Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas, and Attorney General Merrick Garland. The British newspaper The Guardian has also covered the same story. A rare anti-Trump Republican congressman predicted US Republicans will try to impeach Joe Biden every week if they retake the House of Representatives this November. Remembering repeated attempts to defund the Affordable Care Act under Barack Obama, Adam Kinzinger of Illinois said, "That's going to look like child's play in terms of what Marjorie Taylor Greene is going to demand of Kevin McCarthy." Kinzinger added, "They're going to demand an impeachment vote on President Biden every week." Adam Kinzinger was speaking to David Axelrod, a former Obama advisor, on his Axis File podcast. Kinzinger is one of two Republicans on the House committee investigating the Capitol attack that Donald Trump incited. He will retire this November. The other Republican, Liz Cheney of Wyoming, lost her primary to a Trump-backed challenger. Marjorie Taylor Greene from Georgia is among far-right Republicans who have already introduced or threatened impeachment articles against Joe Biden on issues including the COVID pandemic, immigration, Afghanistan, and misdemeanor of Biden's son, Hunter Biden. Adam Kinzinger added, "I think it will be a very difficult majority for him to govern unless he just chooses to go absolutely crazy with them, in which case you may see the rise of the silent, non-existent, moderate Republican that may still exist out there, but I don't know. Democrats impeached Donald Trump twice. Adam Kinzinger voted against the first impeachment over the blackmail of Ukraine for political purposes, but for the second over the Capitol attack. He told David Axelrod he regretted the first vote. 9 other House Republicans voted for Donald Trump's second impeachment, making it the most bipartisan in history. At trial in the Senate, 7 Republicans found Trump guilty, but that was not enough for a conviction. Discussing Adam Kinzinger's work on the January 6th committee, David Axelrod pointed to a recent opinion poll which said 72% of Republican voters still back Donald Trump's lie about election fraud, and say Joe Biden is not the legitimate president of America.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Virtues of the Believers, Friday the 3rd of Ramadan, 1394, the 20th of September, 1974. Tawakkul means that in every situation you rely on Allah and place your hopes in Him. Have you seen how when some people face difficulties in life, when they go through hardship and they exhaust every visible means at their disposal to rectify their situation without success, what do? Have you seen or heard this? They will do one of a few things. Either they will surrender, when nothing they do seems to work, or they will resign themselves to fate, or they will take the path of least resistance. They won't give up, but in practice they will do whatever is easiest. Others end their own lives. For example, someone gains power in a country and little by little, other powers wear him down. Every day, somewhere in his dominion, there is some clamor against him. Then when he has no choices left, when he is utterly humiliated, tired and dejected, he takes his own life. He ends it. These are the routes open to someone when they don't have Allah and find themselves in a blind alley. When they reach a dead end and they see that they have nowhere left to turn, no escape, these people will take one of three options. They will either surrender to fate, take the path of least resistance, or they will kill themselves. However, for someone who believes in Allah and find themselves at a dead end, these options are not available to them. Their dignity won't let them follow these paths. But there is one door that is always open to them. And what door is that? Placing their trust in Allah. They will say, "This is a dead end." But the Allah I know makes doors out of dead ends. What is a dead end? For Allah, there are no dead ends for us. In Allah's hands, every dead end is a door. There is always a way.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Is there a dead end worse than the Battle of Uhud? The few soldiers of Islam, preoccupied with the pursuit of spoils on the battlefield, forgot to guard the flanks. Because of the heedlessness of a few soldiers, the Quraysh were able to outflank the Muslims, who had laid down their swords and dismounted their horses to collect spoils. Suddenly, they see themselves surrounded by the enemy on all sides, attacking them. Now, it's clear what an unarmed, unprepared soldier will do in this situation, isn't it? He runs. He runs for his life. Shaitan calls out through the voice of a wicked person that the Prophet has been slain. It's obvious, Shaitan is always doing this. Shaitan's plans are clear and his helpers are clear. He is always putting doubts in people's minds. He is always sapping their morale, telling them they failed, that the Prophet has died. In this crisis, in this dead end, what does a faithful person who relies on Allah do? Is there a dead end greater than this? There is no way out. Your own soldiers have thrown down their weapons and fled. The enemies have surrounded you on all sides. No one is coming to your aid. But there is still a way out, to put your trust in Allah, to have hope.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Russia, Saglam, Istanbul.
Sayed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
The battered town of Obeznoy. I came here to find out if locals are fearful of the Ukrainian army, who have made recent gains not far to the west. A local school in the center of town.
Yes, we are worried. If the Ukrainian army comes here, there will be reprisal against teachers. But our strength is in the hope that it will never happen. I have colleagues whose children happen to be on the other side. They are afraid of coming to work because they are scared for their children and themselves.
Why do you think Ukraine would kill teachers? What's the reasoning behind that?
They say that we are ideological frontline workers and we are involved in Russian propaganda. This is the main thing that teachers are blamed for, but this region is 80% Russian speakers.
Irina, who's lived in this town all her life, tells me that she has heard rumors that teachers have been killed in Kapiansk, a town recently taken by Ukraine. This shocking video was posted online, claiming to be civilians in Kapiansk. It was uploaded by Maxim Zorin, a former member of Ukraine's notorious Azov Regiment, although he later altered his post, claiming the video had been taken from a Russian soldier's phone.
Now, to my knowledge, this is the only video that has surfaced in this war so far that clearly shows civilians being executed and dumped into a mass grave. Now, this video has been completely ignored by the mainstream media of NATO countries. Why? Because the evidence suggests a strong likelihood that these are Ukrainian soldiers executing pro-Russian civilians.
A headline from Britain's Daily Mail newspaper. The article quotes an advisor to Ukraine's Interior Ministry. A hunt has been declared on collaborators, and their life is not protected by law. Our intelligence services are eliminating them, shooting them like pigs. A humanitarian center. The Ukrainian government have not only threatened teachers, but those who distribute or receive humanitarian aid with jail.
We did nothing bad. We tried to help children and elderly people. What did we do? We were giving out aid under shelling. We helped people who couldn't walk. What shall we be afraid of? We just helped. I think there's nothing bad in it.
One of the volunteers asks us for a lift to help an old woman nearby.
What do you think of the Ukrainians threatening people who take humanitarian aid?
We heard of it. We even saw a video that in Kupiansk, some guys were taken into trenches and shot in the head. We have no internet, no proof. But they say there are nationalistic battalions that do it. It shouldn't be so. We are all people, Russian, Ukrainian, Belarusian.
While thousands of pro-Russians flee Ukrainian advances in fear, those that remain in areas taken over by Ukraine risk execution due to their political leanings. Indeed, most in Donbass expect a genocide or ethnic cleansing of Russian speakers if the Ukrainians were to ever reconquer the region. Johnny Miller, Rebeznoy, Donbass.
In order to verify the names of inmates on both sides, a Saudi technical delegation arrived in Sana'a, while another from the Prisoners Affairs Committee of Sana'a entered Riyadh, and the first stage of the swap deal clinched in Amman.
Sana'a always stresses the importance of humanitarian issues, and if there is a progress on humanitarian cases, it will lead to dialogue on political and military cases as well. There could be an extension of the terms and confidence building between the two parties. Sana'a welcomes any progress on humanitarian issues, encourages this visit, and asserts that its military warnings are serious, and moving toward peace is in the interest of Saudi Arabia.
The head of Yemen's National Committee for Prisoners Affairs says the visits have nothing to do with any political talks. However, observers say this mutual visit is the first of its